The following views and opinions do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its staff, management, Franklin Communications, or parent company. To hear a replay of this show or one of the other great shows that previously aired, log on to columbustoday.com, keyword Dentally Speaking, or find them at dentallyspeaking.com. Listeners should not use Dr. Kvitko's comments and advice in place of an actual dental exam.
Brighten your life with a smile that shows the professional touch of Dr. Kvitko.
Time now for Dentally Speaking with Dr. Brian Kvitko. Call 459-9769. That's 459-WSNY to discuss your dental issues. Now, here's your host, Dr. Kvitko.
94.7 FM, WSNY. Welcome to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko, also known as everything you've always wanted to know about dentistry, but were too numb to ask. Hello, I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko. Thank you for joining me here on Sunny 95. It's Halloween, October 31st of 2010. Happy Halloween, everybody. Hope you've had a great Halloween so far. In keeping with the Halloween theme, Dr. Kvitko's question of the day today is, Count Dracula, the fictional vampire, was first introduced in Bram Stoker's gothic horror novel Dracula in what year? Was it 1897, 1931, or 1992? Please give a guess or call us with your guess at 459-9769. That's 459-WSNY. You can also send emails to drkvitko@dentallyspeaking.com. So if you don't want to be on the air, just want to give your guess by email, it's drkvitko@dentallyspeaking.com. All right, now our guest today is Dr. George Gatsius II. Dr. Gatsius is an associate professor of restorative dentistry at the School of Dental Medicine in Colorado, in Aurora, Colorado. And I traveled to Colorado to interview him, and so let's go ahead and listen in. I am traveling, and I am in Fort Collins, Colorado, and I was fortunate enough to be able to arrange an interview with a gentleman, a dentist, who works at the dental school, and I'm going to ask him his name here.
My name is Dr. George Gatsius, and I'm an associate professor at the University of Colorado School of Dental Medicine, which is in Aurora, Colorado, and at the Anschutz Medical Campus.
Okay, and is that how close is that to Denver?
Oh, yeah, it's a suburb of Denver. It's actually on the way to DIA from downtown Denver.
What's Denver International Airport?
International.
Okay, it took me like a second, but I figured that out. Okay. Now, I understand that you've been an associate professor or clinical professor, right? Associate professor or clinical?
Associate professor, but clinical track.
Okay. For how long?
I've been full-time now at the dental school for 11 years.
Okay. And in the last 11 years, can you tell me what kind of trends you're seeing? I mean, I know there's a lot of new technology, but what about just in the overall, the challenges that dentistry faces as a profession and the things that maybe are happening as far as the public and the healthcare plan, the insurance policies, those kinds of things. What have you seen change in the last 12 years? And I guess it is only a half-hour show.
Yeah. Well, I think the greatest change that we're seeing is we still have a high quality of applicant pool and really outstanding top quality students. I think you're seeing curriculum change. I think you're seeing, as we've seen probably in clinical dentistry and private practice, patients want choices. And we've gone from, of course, when you and I went to school, we've gone from a sick care system to an elective system.
Okay, so instead of, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Implants, cosmetic dentistry, we're treating, I see two, in the dental school, I see two populations, dental patient populations, you see. You have the sick, the emergent population, but you also have a population that comes for advanced care, implant dentistry and cosmetics and state-of-the-art.
Okay, so I've never heard it called sick care and well care. I think I refer to it as need-based and want-based, but is that the same thing?
Exactly, same thing. Basically you have the emergent population that wants to get out of pain.
Right, right. And they're in pain because they either have had a bad experience, have heard it's going to be unpleasant, in some cases can't afford it, or think they can't afford it, so they stay away. And what's being done that you know of to kind of reach those people?
Yeah, I think dentistry right now, and I'm also the president of the Metro Denver Dental Society, want to make sure that all my comments are not reflective and not representative of the Dental Association or the dental school. I want to give you that.
Okay, these are your personal opinion, not representative of the dental school or the Dental Association.
Right. So with that disclaimer, I think you're seeing that there's truly an access to care problem. And I believe the access to care problem is access to money. If you're not working, you're self-employed. Sometimes the younger patients that are coming out of college that may be starting their own business, self-employed, they may not have dental insurance. And so those individuals, if they don't have extra income, find dentistry and the access to care with dentistry in the private sector difficult. I think that our number one goal and our number one job at the dental school is to train dentists, and we have to have a win-win policy for our patients. I think the patients get outstanding care, but it's not convenient, and so typically we will see dental school patients that maybe aren't in the real strong workforce, or they've been retired, or they have time. And
okay, so, I've never heard it put that way either, but I agree, it is access to money, isn't it? Because there are dentists all over the place, and yet there are people that say they can't access the system. And we have a lot of kids, I call them kids, the young 20s, where I think it used to be you turn 23, I think it was, and they'd drop you from the insurance plan of your parents, something like that. When we come back, I have more questions for you, of course, but when we come back, I want to get a little more into that and how you see the new healthcare bill helping or maybe not helping or what, because I personally haven't heard the word dentistry mentioned all that much in this healthcare debate. So hang with us. You can hang with us, right?
Excellent.
Okay, hang tight. All right, so let me just restate Dr. Kvitko's question of the day today. It is, Count Dracula, the fictional vampire, was first introduced in Bram Stoker's gothic horror novel, Dracula, in what year? Was it A, 1897, B, 1931, or C, 1992? And we have a caller on line one. I believe it's Joanne. Joanne, you're on line one.
Hi, is it B?
Oh, I'm sorry, that's not correct. I'm sorry about that. Thank you for calling, though.
Thanks.
Bye-bye now. Don't forget that podcasts of the show are available by going to columbustoday.com, or you can also access podcasts at dentallyspeaking.com and iTunes. You can go to iTunes and search Dentally Speaking or Dr. Kvitko. And now back to my interview with Dr. Gatsius. All right, so I'm still speaking with Dr. Gatsius. He's nice enough to answer some of my questions. He is an associate professor at the Colorado School of Dental Medicine in Denver, correct? Did I say that right?
Correct.
Okay, good. And we're talking about access to care, which Dr. Gatsius, I think, correctly pointed out is really just access to money. So there are dentists all over the place. We all know that, and yet people can't access care. And what I want to find out from you is what do you, and again, a lot of this is your personal opinion. We've made that clear earlier in the interview. What did the new healthcare bill that was recently signed do for dentistry? I just don't think I've ever heard the word dentist or dentistry or tooth mentioned in all of those discussions.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up. One of the things that I know the American Dental Association was discouraged with was there wasn't really dental provisions in that bill. We still continue to have problems with treating the young patient. We have problems with adequate Medicaid reimbursement rates.
Let me just stop you there, because people hear that all the time, and I don't think they know what we mean by that. I think what they think we mean is we can't afford our Mercedes payment or something, and what we really mean is we can't afford a car.
You know, I'm glad you pointed that out. A lot of patients have never really run a business, and so when you send them the bill for after insurance coverage or the co-pays or the balance of their bill and their treatment, the patient writes the check out to the doctor, and I think they think that that's 100% net profit.
The rest of the bill's been paid by their insurance or the government, right?
Exactly.
And it hasn't been.
And the other thing is, you know, typically overhead in a dental practice, 65-70%. And it's not the same as a, say, a family practice physician. So one of the problems that we have is, you know, Medicaid reimbursement payments sometimes are as low as 70%.
70%?
We have gotten, I think, up to the 80% level in the state of Colorado recently due to some efforts from the Colorado Dental Association. But the bottom line is the state budgets and the market and the economy the last 2 years, revenues have plummeted. And
let me do the math, because I think I don't know if people caught what you just said. If you charge $100, your overhead is 70%, it costs you $70 to provide that service, right? And then, he was shaking his head yes, by the way. It's radio.
Yes, absolutely.
And then, okay, so then you need to collect $70 to just pay your expenses and not pay the doctor, correct?
That's absolutely correct. And, you know, and then one of the problems also is the utilization rate. And typically, sometimes Medicaid patients aren't the most compliant patients. So we really need to work with our state legislatures, we need to work with our budget constraints, and we need to get the reimbursement rates up.
Because at 70%, you've essentially covered your cost, but you did not earn a dime as the dentist.
Yeah, absolutely right there.
And if you get the 80% like you're working on, you said you're trying to get it up to 80%, you would make $10?
Yes, and so, you know, you have to be you have to be very, very in tune to incorporating Medicaid patients into your private practice, which is difficult. That's why you have, typically in Colorado, we have a lot of large pediatric clinics that do the gross volume of the Medicaid care.
Small Smiles, those type places? Okay. And on a previous show, I talked about Small Smiles, about how there have been some problems. And I only mentioned it because it was an active lawsuit. It was news at the time, and I don't know where it is right now. But what then happens is, tell me if I'm wrong, the patient seems to be the one that always suffers, because those offices, they have to find a way to pay their bill. And so shortcuts are taken, and shortcuts that I'm not willing to take, and I'm sure you're not teaching that at the dental school, right?
Right. But aside from that, the other concern is, you know, dentistry as a profession in the 30 years that I've been practicing has done tremendous amount of high-volume care for indigents. And we've taken care of some of the indigent population. We started 4 or 5 years ago, Colorado COMOM, Colorado Mission of Mercy. And, you know, we'll spend a weekend and we'll see hundreds and hundreds of patients, free dentistry. The Metro Denver Dental Society started Kids in Need of Dentistry a long time ago at schools and have always donated their time. So dentists typically do a lot of volunteer humanitarian work. But we need a government that's going to provide a model that's going to provide ongoing, consistent care and through the private practice system.
Right, because charity is not health care.
Exactly, and you can't do it 100% of the time at all the time. So anyway, which brings us to the next a topic that's really come to the forefront, and I think we're going to have more and more discussion on that, and that's the workforce issue.
You know what? Yeah, workforce. I was going to get to that soon. I want you to hold that thought for a second, because what has come out of healthcare, I guess, out of this healthcare bill, are some what are being called mid-level providers, some way of changing the workforce that works through a dental office or at a dental office, and we're going to talk about that more in a second, too. Okay, we've had another guest to our question of the day. Dina has emailed her guess to drkavitko@dentallyspeaking.com, and she guesses C, 1992. And I'm sorry, Dina, but that's not correct. All right, back to the interview with Dr. Gatsius. All right, so continuing my interview with Dr. Gatsius, and what we got to talking about was how the healthcare bill has some provisions in it for changing the way the dental office is staffed. And there's a new term called mid-level providers. Can you explain that to my listeners, what a mid-level provider is?
Sure. There's been several models that have been proposed, and I want to make sure your listeners understand that these have been proposed. They're new. In New Zealand, they have had mid-level providers where individuals have had extra training, more than a dental hygienist, but not as much as a dentist. And they have provided some intermediate care in the dental profession.
What kind of things do they do that a dentist, that a hygienist can't, but a dentist is now doing? Do they extract teeth or what?
It depends on the model that you're talking with, and I'm not totally familiar with all the models, and I don't want to say what they can or cannot do in New Zealand. The model that has been attempted to be done was in the Alaska population. The native Alaskans certainly have a problem with getting care.
And in their case, there is maybe an access issue because they live in remote areas, and there isn't a dental office every 3 miles like you would find, say, in Colorado and in the population centers.
Right. And in those, in Alaska, the model that has been promoted is the DHAT model, D-H-A-T. And those mid-level providers are capable. Well, they say that they have been trained and capable of removing teeth, cutting hard tissue, and doing a wide range of things that the dentist would do. From that and from different models, there has been studies done, I don't think real comprehensively, to say that we can treat more patients that may not be getting care through mid-level providers.
So are you saying these mid-level providers will be, they'll have their own offices, their own practices somehow? They'll be out on their own in more remote areas, or will they be working at a dental office under the auspices of a dentist to allow that dentist to see more patients? Which would it be?
Well, that's interesting you brought that up. The different models that have been proposed still haven't come to the real crux of the problem, and that's the economics of the thing.
Yeah, why is it that instead of just paying the dentists that we now have and the staff that we now have enough money to allow them to do the treatment that these people need, and I'm talking about people that happen to be on welfare, one of those plans, they're always looking to increase the duties that of some other staff member. Rather, the actual issue, like you said, is access to money. So just pay the dentist enough to stay in business and provide that care instead of empowering people to do more dentistry.
You know, I'm so glad you brought that up. Let me give you a history in Colorado. Colorado has been one of the foremost states to have a very liberal dental practice law, which has allowed assistants to do much in clinical practice that a dentist could do, such as pack cord, take final impressions for crown impressions.
Packing cord is putting string around the gum line because the gums start to bleed and you don't want that in the impression. But so you're taking a crown, and basically it's pushing tissue out of the way. And traditionally, anything that was involving manipulating tissue, cutting tissue, was only the dentist. And now you're saying, well, for a while, Colorado's allowed something more.
So we've been one of the more liberal states in the Dental Practice Act, and basically a dental assistant could do anything except cut hard tissue, prepare a tooth with a dental drill, or remove a tooth, which is irreversible, or do surgical cutting on soft tissue. Other than that, they can do pretty much anything, make temporary crowns, fit impressions, whatever. In addition, Colorado has one of the first independent dental hygiene practice laws, which we've had that in effect for, I think, a good over 10 years.
So for 10 years, dental hygienists have been allowed to open up their own offices without a dentist present and just clean teeth.
Absolutely right. And the interesting thing about it was, and you know, my wife's a dental hygienist, so I love dental hygienists, but the interesting about the whole situation was it was promoted in the beginning years ago for access to care. And the problem is, from an economic standpoint, dental hygienist has to open an office, pay the same overhead, and has the same cost. So what happened was there was only maybe three or four independent dental hygiene practices in the whole last 10 years in the state of Colorado.
Because they found they couldn't provide it any cheaper than the price was through a dentist, where they were working for a dentist, right?
Yes, and more importantly is they didn't. A lot of dental hygienists don't want to. They don't want to run a business.
Yeah, they like just showing up, getting paid whether the patients come or not, right?
And let the dentist manage the practice. And then, you know, so even if they have a independent dental hygiene practice, they still have certain rules and they cannot diagnose things in their practice, so they still have to have an affiliation by a licensed practicing dentist.
Right, and in Ohio it's similar. Although they can't have their own private practice, they are allowed to see patients in the office without us. If the patient knows in advance, they've been seen by the dentist in the last 7 months, and they are not able to diagnose. They can't say you have a cavity because they're not trained to do that. But it's just the economics aren't there. Yeah, it's just really not there.
Estás escuchando Dental Speaking con Dr. Kawiko aquí en su estación favorita, Sandy 95.
And you've got a smile that can light up this whole town. I haven't seen it in a while since she brought you down. You say you're fine, I know you better than that.
So Dr. Gatzios, what is it that is different in a medical situation? We hear all about medical insurance, healthcare, all that. Why is it so different? Tell me about the medical model.
You know, it's interesting that we're discussing this because I've been in a major teaching hospital now for 10 years and was practicing 2 days a week out of my 5 days at the dental school. The medical school and the residents that they have in training interns really do a good job. And for medicine, that's economically a feasible way of managing and seeing more patients. Dentistry is totally different. Dentists basically are surgeons, and not all medical physicians are surgeons.
And what you mean by that is, people don't think of dentists as doing surgery, but what you're saying is we are cutting tissue, in our case it's usually teeth, although there is some gum surgery that goes on. And a physician is more of a diagnostician. They diagnose and say, I think you have appendicitis, you need to do this, you need to do that. I think you might have the flu, you need to take these pills, right?
Exactly. And what happens then, on the medical model, once the diagnosis is made, you can bring well-trained individuals in to write prescriptions, to follow up, to do other clinical activities. Whereas dentistry is more of a surgical-based treatment. And so the patients expect the dentist to cut on them. Right. They expect them to do their treatment and to give them the quality of dental care. So being in education, I can assure you, it's very, very time-consuming and expensive to train someone over a four-year period of time to do high-quality surgical dentistry.
Oh, definitely. Dental schools are the most expensive training programs in the nation, right?
Absolutely. And so the facilities, the equipment, and the time it takes. So if we have that understanding in the mid-level provider workforce question and models, then we still have the same problem. And the problem is to get and train an individual, whether they're called a dental student or a mid-level provider, they still have to have high-level, intense, time-consuming training.
Right, so why don't we just train more dentists if they think there's an access to care issue rather than pulling people off the street and saying, you're going to be allowed to extract teeth now?
Absolutely. And so whether we call them mid-level providers or we train mid-level providers, in my opinion, they still are going to have the economic constraints that will go with being able to provide that service and have patients pay for them.
You know, years and years ago, I had a hygienist who was making some comments about, I guess she didn't feel like she was fully respected, and she was, for all of her knowledge, and they do go to school for 4 years at Ohio State University to become a dental hygienist, which is a little surprising considering what they're actually allowed to do once they graduate. And I said to her, I said, Rose, if you want to be a dentist, why don't you go to dental school? And guess what? She did. And I guess my message would be, if you want to be a dentist, go to dental school. If you want to cut on teeth, go to dental school. What would you say?
I think that's a very fair suggestion. And the bottom line is, in summary of all this, is it's going to cost, no matter what model you have, it's going to cost the same amount of resources and assets to train mid-level providers. So are they in actuality going to provide that extra needed care, and will they be in a geographic area? Okay,
that's been the biggest thing, is every time the government puts out money to train auxiliary, the idea being they're going to go into remote areas, they wind up in the population centers and the access to care is no better. Am I right?
So we do have a problem. I think dentistry has been at the forefront of any healthcare profession in prevention, in improving quality of care. And that's why I said in the very beginning, you know, we're doing different procedures now. We're not doing emergent care. We're not taking teeth out. We're not doing, we're doing elective care. We're doing the periodontists are doing cosmetic periodontics, okay, gum treatments. And we're relating that to aesthetic treatments and implants.
Right, right. So we're evolving, and we still have some nagging issues that we have to deal with. But as a profession, we seem to be always on the forefront and looking ahead and trying to provide better care, better and better care to our patients.
Yeah, and I think that we will come up with solutions working in partnership with different organizations.
Well, thank you very much. I think there's a lot of work to be done. We need to get with our legislators, our congressmen, our senators, our governors, and try to explain that dentistry is not an orphan child of medicine, that dentistry is medicine. It just happens to be we are the specialists in the oral environment. And when your physician looks in your mouth and they say, ah, they don't see teeth. They see the oropharynx. They see the uvula. They see behind the tonsils, basically. I'm sorry, the tonsils is the first thing they notice, right?
Yes, and let me tell you one of the things that I'm really excited about at our dental school. And we have made major progress in collaborating with the family practice physicians department at the University of Colorado Med School. We actually have medical students now coming to our facility and learning how to do intraoral examinations, and I just think that's fabulous.
That is good, because I have to tell you, I had a physician sit in my chair a few years back, and he was telling me about a tooth that was bothering him. He said, I think it's tooth number 34. And there's only 32 teeth, as you know. So it'd be nice if the physicians knew at least how many teeth are in a person's mouth.
Yes, and one of the things in Colorado, over on the western slope, you know, there's some larger cities, but we really need to get, and there's a push to get family practice physicians into more of the rural areas. And so they're going to need to have some dental training and be able to communicate with their dentists and their take care of their patients.
That sounds great. Well, I really appreciate you talking to me, and I think we got some good information. I know I learned some things, and hopefully my listeners did too. So, Dr. Gatsios, thank you so much. Thanks for joining me on the show, and you go have a great day, okay?
Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye now. All right, we are running a little bit late. I want to thank my sponsors, Moxie's, Seagull Bags, Studio B Hair Design, and Canton City Chinese Restaurant for allowing me to do this show commercial-free. Also, during Dr. Gatsius' interview, we had a caller. Mary Ann called in. She called in with a guest to the question of the day, Dr. Kvitko's question of the day, which was, Count Dracula, the fictional vampire, was first introduced in Bram Stoker's gothic horror novel, Dracula, in what year? Was it 1897, 1931, or 1992? Mary Ann correctly guessed 1897, but Mary Ann, you hung up before we could get your information, so in order for us to get you the free flowers from Vice Stember, we need you to call back. That's 459-9797. or you can send me an email at drkavitko@dentallyspeaking.com and we'll get you taken care of. Okay, so next week on the show is going to be, our guest is going to be Dr. Kenise Bean, Associate Professor of Clinical Dentistry, Community Education at Ohio State University College of Dentistry. In essence, she is in charge of the mobile dental office, the one that drives around in the big motorhome and goes to areas where kids are in need. Really excited to have her on the show, and so be sure to tune in. You are listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kavitko here on Sunny 95 every Sunday morning at 7:30. Go out and have a great day, have a great week, and be sure to come right back here 7:30 next Sunday morning. Goodbye.
If you're interested in learning more about this and other dental health topics, go to columbustoday.com, keyword Dentally Speaking, to access full half-hour episodes of Dr. Kavitko's shows.
If you would like to book Dr. Kavitko to speak at your next event, please call 614-262-9588. That's 614-262-9588. Or send an email to drkavitko@dentallyspeaking.com. That's drkvitko@dentallyspeaking.com.